You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ, Bucky back together. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm great. It's been a great weekend. I mean, DJ, like, it is coming fast. Like, football is fast approaching. We talk about the NFL, like, even at the high school, we have another week of workouts, then they get a week off, then it's 2 weeks, and then it's on. And so, it's crazy how fast it goes. Like, we have this slow period in June, but man, it doesn't seem that slow because you look at the calendar, you're like, oh man, it's only 3 weeks before we start doing stuff.
Yeah, I looked. As we're recording this, I think I have 3 days before I got to turn in my first look report here over the summer. So that's the, you know, I was good this time. Normally, I don't wait very long. Usually, I take a week or two off, and then I already start trying to get ahead and start watching guys for next year. This year, I forced myself, Buck, to
You didn't force yourself. You decided that you want to be Brooks Koepka. And golf has replaced the film study time. And so it's going to be interesting to see how you're doing that. I can't wait to hear you tell me how you're putting while watching tape up on your big screen. And so, like, I can study it while, yeah. Like,
yeah, because Belichick is on the treadmill while I watch tape. Maybe it'll help. I'm not a very good putter. Maybe it'll help me if I distract myself with some Jared Verse tape from Florida State while I'm trying to putt from 8 feet. We've got a fun episode today because we've got one of our really best buddies who we've known forever, who is he's the best of the best in what he does in terms of covering college football. Nobody does it better than Bruce Feldman. You can see him on Fox all throughout the fall. You can read him at The Athletic. The Freaks List, I'm sure, is coming out before too long, which is really become one of the must reads in all of football. Every NFL scout is printing that out and going off that as they go into schools in the fall. But he's the best. Excited to bring him in now. It's our buddy Bruce Feldman. Bruce, appreciate you taking the time, man. I know you've got football camps. Got to get your son off the football camps. He's squared away. He's locked in working on the fundamentals as we speak. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Sorry we're losing you to golf. I feel like this. It's the
Joel Patterson
of you. What?
Do you golf?
I used to, but it takes up way too much time. You know, it was like, you know, to here, living in Southern California, it's like a 6-hour event to get to it and be on courses. So, no, I don't.
So here's the setup, Bruce. First of all, you get a couple of kids off to college, which I've done. So kids, especially during the school year, they're out at school. We play one day a week. There's a group of us where there's four buddies, but we can bring in four other buddies. We play, all we do is play scramble. So if it's four of us playing, we're just trying to combine, you know, we're playing best ball and we're trying to shoot as low as we can collectively. I don't have to chase my ball into the woods. The course is a public course. It's 5 minutes from my house. We tee off at 12:30. It costs $37. This is not Augusta that we're playing here. But it's one day a week. You're with some buddies. It goes fast. It's cheap. It's a different style of golf, man.
I basically now play, and I actually played like 1 year in junior college. So I grew up playing a ton. But I play once or twice a year, and it's always with our Fox guys. It's either with like Brady Quinn or Leinart or Klatt or whoever, and it's usually
who's the best.
Oh, Klatt's by far the best. Klatt is like a scratch golfer. He plays a lot in Orange County. You know, he's a former baseball player, so
hand-eye coordination, yeah.
Good. You know, Brady doesn't take it too seriously. Matt and I have gotten into it a few times on the course. They're both decent. I want to say Brady's better than Matt, but I don't.
That's because Matt has become like this the IG actor. Yeah, he's the TikTok guy with these sketches and skits and stuff that he's doing as like the dad, the travel dad,
doing all the stereotypes.
Yeah, like he's
is that become, Matt? Is that Matt driven guy. Or is that wife driven? I need the scoop on that.
That I think Matt's super into it. This is Matt's deal. Like we, you know, because we live near each other, and so we're on the road a bunch on the same flights, and we may have a. I remember last fall there was a trip we took where I think I was at the airport at LAX at 5:30. He was there around the same time. And, you know, you're half awake and I glanced over and he's trying to make a video. And, you know, it's like, and you're sitting there and Matt's younger than me. And I'm like, man, you're 40. What are we doing here? Whatever. But he has found a way. And look, you know, his wife is super smart. She was an actor. But I think there's other people who've, you know, like, look, he's embraced it. He's running with it. And he's doing stuff with it. So good for him. And he's entertaining a lot of people. So that's cool. But yeah, it's legit. He's really into it. And I don't, you know, Matt's a decent golfer, but it's not like he's doing that. And, you know, he's got Cole, who's a really good athlete. And then he's got two younger kids who are really young. So I think it's, you know, a way to just, you know, kind of get his
creative outlet, man.
Out. Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. That's funny. That is so funny. Because I see the little things. He had one that posted this weekend about traveling and how to burn up all the time. And he's in various spots in the airport and whatever. Like, it's a lot.
It's the editing to me. Like, I think I could figure out a way to do like a little 30-second gag video. But it would be, to me, having to cut shots and do all that stuff. That's too much.
Oh, he's doing shots and graphics, overlays.
It's actually a lot theatrical. Like, what would have been the best was last year. So when we would do our big noon trips, you know, a lot of times it would sync up with something else on the road. So we were there in Iowa, right? You know, like, I want to say it was around what would have been Midnight Madness. And so obviously their great basketball player, Caitlin Clark, they did some, you know, Matt is a good athlete. He was a good basketball player. And so they were shooting with her and indoors. You know, I would say Matt kind of held his own with her. I mean, he didn't, but he did better than certainly Reggie did. But then we went out where they had this whole street blocked off where both the men's and women's basketball teams at Iowa were being introduced. And it was like, you know, I don't know, it was like 500 people. It's outside. And they had a shooting contest, Matt and Reggie against her. And poor Matt, Reggie actually couldn't make anything in warmups, but then hit a couple of threes in this. And Reggie's just constantly talking, you know, like after that, like he embarrassed Matt. And so I don't know if Matt would ever live that down. If Reggie has the bragging rights on that. Is if Reggie Bush needs bragging rights on anything.
That is funny. Yeah, he's definitely doing okay.
All right, let's jump into some college football stuff and as it relates to the draft, because this has been an interesting event on the calendar, which is the Manning camp just happened. We'll have our buddy Rhett Lewis on, who was there. He'll give us a full rundown on what he saw from these guys. But I did place a call just to get a couple names that jumped out. I mean, the one, everybody saw the video of Joe Milton's throw. For those that don't know, just a little bit about his background and what the expectation is with him and just how kind of unique the arm is with Joe Milton at Tennessee.
Yeah, huge guy. I mean, 6'5", probably 250-ish. He was, you know, as a Florida kid who eventually was at Michigan. They were excited about him. And he played a decent amount and struggled. I don't know how, you know, you wondered about his accuracy. You wondered a little bit about his decision-making. He's a good athlete, too. It's not just he's a big statue guy. And then he ended up losing the job and they were struggling. You know, there was a bunch of things I don't think that were necessarily related to Joe Milton as well, but he ended up transferring to Tennessee. And what I think is really interesting on a couple of things here is we're not going to know about Hendon Hooker being like, you know, he had a terrific year for Tennessee and really credit to Josh Heupel and those guys. They got that program out of the ditch. It had been in a ditch for a long time. And Hendon Hooker, you know, there was some certain, you know, love for him considering he was coming off of, you know, a significant injury. But we won't know if Hendon Hooker, you know, because of his health, by the time Joe Milton's up for the draft, if people are going to go, okay, this thing is like, it translates better than we thought it did because it's kind of that version of the Baylor offense and the routes and everything. It's a little bit of skittish. But I think just in terms of what he could do for Tennessee, you know, they lose a couple of really good receivers and are obviously a terrific right tackle. But I think, you know, if you're one of these people looking at, oh, like what are his Heisman odds? I want to go take a smart, you know, he might be the guy to lay some money on because he is really like he's toolsy, right? He's got a huge arm. He's a huge guy. I don't know if it's fair to compare him to Josh Allen. But he is big. I think his arm is comparable, and he can run, right? I mean, he's not, you know, Anthony Richardson is just to me way twitchier than those guys in terms of, you know, just as a dynamic runner, but, and he's younger certainly, but, you know, maybe that could be the Josh Allen comparison, different offenses they're going to play in. I'm really interested to see how it goes because, you know, I think after what we just saw with Josh Heupel and Hendon Hooker, obviously different quarterbacks, guys who transferred in, but different skill sets. Hendon Hooker looked great in that offense, and we'll see what Joe Milton does.
You know, it's funny, Bruce, because what you bring up are all the things that are going to come into play. As much as we talk about Joe Milton not necessarily being Anthony Richardson, but how Anthony Richardson can help him is if he plays well in Indianapolis, given the numbers that he didn't necessarily put up at Florida, it then encourages more guys to start looking at the prototypical traits, size, athleticism, arm talent, as opposed to the production. And then it becomes more of an NBA draft at the position as opposed to an NFL draft. Are there any other quarterbacks, you know, I know because you know all the other stuff, that have those prototypical dimensions that maybe we talk about like Anthony Richardson, even though they may not be explosive or dynamic like Anthony Richardson?
You know, there's an interesting one who was actually down and, you know, ended up in your backyard for a little bit this summer a month ago. I don't know if it's technically the summer. And it's a really good college quarterback in a very different system who's a huge dude and the ball jumps out of his hand. I just don't know if he's accurate enough for what the NFL wants, but he is going to transition. And that is KJ Jefferson down at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's every bit of 6'3", 250. Now, I think they want to get him down to like in the 235, 237 range, but he is a really thick dude. And so he was training with Whitfield, George Whitfield down in San Diego, because Kendall Browell is the old OC, is now at TCU, and the new offensive coordinator, Dan Enos, is more of a pro style guy. They are going to do stuff under center. And so he did a ton of work. Whitfield had brought out a couple of centers who came from who are players for San Diego State, just so he and the other quarterback, Alan Bowman, could get the actual reps under center. And, you know, this kid he's a really good runner. My guess is he's probably a high 4.6 guy, if that. He's certainly not what Anthony Richardson did, but he is a very big man. And he's played at a high level. Again, the question I would have is, you know, how accurate is he going to be in terms of what the NFL is looking for? Because I think you're seeing this wave of quarterbacks, and you guys can speak to this certainly better than me, but it starts, I feel like, with what Brian Daboll was able to do with Josh Allen. And then there's elements of it with Daboll, what they did with the Giants. You know, you take a quarterback who, you know, can run, but wasn't like tearing it up coming out of Duke, and then, you know, had some success. We saw certainly what the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, fantastic. And so you get guys who are strong physically, who can run, and how do you build around them to major in what they do really well? I just don't know if, you know, where KJ is going to fit in terms of, like, some of those other guys got better in the accuracy part, it sure seemed like. And that's the only question, that's a real question. But there's definitely some intriguing talent there. You know, that would be the guy who I was like, he's a good college quarterback. I just don't know, you know, how the NFL is going to look at him.
That's interesting. There's so many different quarterbacks I want to hit you on, so I'm glad we got you for a minute here. But I want to kind of group some of them together here, which is, I guess, if you go to when I was a kid, it was a big deal. The Padres were terrible during that time, but you would go to fireworks night. That was the only game they would ever sell out. And then as a little kid, you're waiting, is this the grand finale? You're tugging on your parents' shirt. Hey, is this the grand finale? Like, you'll know when you see the grand finale. This feels like with the Pac-12 going to the last year with SC and UCLA, with the quarterbacks in this conference, that this is literally the grand finale. Maybe it's the end of the whole conference. That's a whole nother conversation we don't need to jump into. But in terms of the concentration of talented quarterbacks, is this going to be the best year the Pac-12's ever had?
That I can remember, absolutely. Like, there was a time, I remember going to a game at the Coliseum where the aforementioned Matt Leinart went up against a quarterback who was hotter than him that day, and that was Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and obviously, it was like 22 out of 23 or something crazy.
Yeah,
like that.
I remember that. Like 23 in a row, you know, and it was just – was remarkable in that game. And there were other good Pac-12 quarterbacks, or Pac-10, I think, at the time, quarterbacks. What's great about this crop, I mean, to me, Caleb, I don't know if you could say anybody's a sure thing, but just there's hard to pick holes in his game. I mean, he's just so, so gifted. You know, he's not 6'4", but he's a thick kid. He's much bigger than, you know, much taller than Russell Wilson. You know, if you're talking about like lower body's big, he's elusive, you know, great off platform. And then you get, and I'm curious to hear what, you know, what Rhett and those guys thought about Michael Penix Jr. at Washington. Had a phenomenal season last year. I like him a lot. You know, he can make some wow throws. There's at times you'll see some stuff where it'll be a little head scratching, but you know, I think, look, it was his first year, in that program. I think he's really good. Bo Nix can get out of trouble and do some crazy stuff. And he got, you know, I thought they did a really good job with him last year. He was pretty inconsistent.
Played great last year. He really did.
And let's see what – now, look, he's going to be in a slightly different system. Will Stein comes from UTSA, takes over the offense with Kenny Dillingham, getting the head coaching job at ASU. But Bo Nix is really good at escaping trouble and extending plays. And he did that – you know, you can watch. There was like a play he made, I want to say on like third and long, against LSU when he was at Auburn. He, you know, he evaded like eight guys, and it's LSU. Those were legit dudes, and he makes plays. I just think we saw the consistency, and I like Bo Nix. I had a long talk with him at some point late last year, and I just think his perspective, you know, I was obviously a coach's kid, but his perspective I thought was really good on how getting away was good for him. And I want to see what he does in the second year. I think the receivers around him are better. But then you get in this other layer of quarterbacks out there that I think those guys are going to, you know, kind of steal the thunder. But like there's a batch of other ones underneath them that I think are going to be really interesting to watch. I mean, you have Cam Ward at Washington State, second year of the system, was really successful when he came up from Incarnate Word. The kid at Arizona, Jaden Delora, he actually has some Caleb in him. He's way streakier, but watch him against UCLA. He just torches them. They have really good receivers. I know Bucky knows one of them well, is like one of the best young receivers in the country. Tetteroa McMillan is from out here. Like Jed Fish, they're going to light people up, at least on that side of the ball. I mean, he's really good. You see what, like, you know, UCLA got a five-star quarterback who everybody wanted out of Michigan.
Does he have a chance to start?
He definitely has a chance to start. I think it's a three-quarterback race. When I was there I spent the day with them late in the spring, and so they took a transfer, Colin Schley from Kent State, who was a really good basketball recruit at one point and is a very good athlete who I know Chip Kelly was high on. He's battling for the job. You know, they still have Garbers, who was the backup, who I think, you know, handled himself pretty well. But like, this is an interesting quarterback battle they have. And so I think this is a really, really good group. And we haven't even mentioned, you know, there's a former five-star who started the DJ. I mean, I spent some time around him. Mm-hmm. I think, what is his second act looked? I mean, DJ Uiagalelei is came in with so much hype. And I thought, you know, I spent an hour with him just kind of chatting, and he picked Oregon State just because he liked what those coaches can do in terms of learning the pro style, developing him under center. I think there's a lot of stuff that I know he knows he needs to clean up. But they have they actually have better talent there skill wise than I think people realize. Their running back was the Pac-12 freshman of the year. They have a slot receiver who's super explosive. And I think, you know, they were really good last year. They won 10 games, and their starter is actually Ben Gulbranson, who's another Southern California quarterback. He's actually there. They have three interesting quarterbacks, but DJU is the one everybody knows. So I think they're expecting him to just pull away, and he's going to have to be at his best to beat those other two guys out.
You know, speaking of the pack, I think it was interesting when Jaden Daniels made the decision to transfer from Arizona State and he goes to LSU. I had a chance to see him at Elite 11. What do you think about him? Because you've seen him first at Arizona State, and then we saw how he developed at LSU. What do you think? What are your thoughts in general? Because remember, he was a much ballyhooed, hyped quarterback coming out of high school.
Yeah, I thought he did a really good job of kind of carrying things on his back. It's not to say he didn't have any talent around him, because he did at ASU. But I thought what especially Joe Sloan, that's the quarterback coach at LSU, did was they catered and built around him what he does well. He's really, he's a terrific running quarterback. He's a really, I think he's a bright kid. Physically, he's really wiry, I wondered how well will he hold up. And obviously he held up well. I think he was a revelation to me. It's one thing for the two guys who transferred into the Pac-12 in terms of, there's more obviously because Caleb did, but we're talking about the two guys who, Bo Nix coming from the SEC to go there, and then certainly Penix going from the Big Ten up there, but to go into the SEC and really into the SEC program, which was reeling. It was, it was a restart, Brian Kelly's first year. I thought his leadership and his presence spoke a lot about his character. And there was a lot of stuff that, I think we kind of maybe forget about that he had to deal with at ASU at the end. I mean, that program was kind of imploding around him because of all the off-field stuff that had gone on there and the NCAA investigation and all this stuff. So now his kind of second wind. And by the way, the quarterback he held off, Garrett Nussmeier, he's super talented. He's probably one of the 10 most talented quarterbacks in the country, just in terms of some of the things he can do. But he's younger and he's still, he's still a little raw. I think for Jaden Daniels to keep that job, even to some degree, especially after losing the first game, essentially a home game against Florida State, I think also speaks to his character and his resilience. And so this is a year where if you're LSU, and look, everybody who's coached there in the last 25 years has won a national title. This is the year with Alabama, rebuilding and, losing their two best players on each side of the ball, and Georgia, losing their starting quarterback. If you're LSU and you have what they have coming back, I think it's all there for them at least to make a run at the playoff, if not more.
What about two teams and their quarterbacks? Bigger question than a more narrow question. In terms of the expectation this year, when you look at Michigan and Florida State, and you look at the expectations for those two teams, but then also the play of those two quarterbacks who are very talented, where do you feel more confident in those two, maybe from a team standpoint and then maybe individually from those?
I feel more confident in Michigan. Now, look, I saw them a lot. Our crew did maybe 7 of their games. I mean, that's a lot, right? And J.J. McCarthy is very gifted. I mean, he can throw on the run. He pretty much has everything you're looking for. The one thing I don't think he's had a lot of was just, he plays in a different system, right? It's more traditional pro style. I mean, when I was saying I spent some time with Alan Bowman, Alan Bowman was the third string guy for a while at Michigan. He was talking about there's like 28 different kinds of footwork you have to learn in that offense. And I thought he was really good in the games that mattered, certainly to them, Ohio State on the road. And I talked to him for something a couple of weeks back before that game. And he was like, ooh, this is like bulletin board material he's given me. And he was like, all good with it. And they backed it up. I mean, they did not have Blake Corum, All-American running back. And they really, Donovan Edwards had a big game, but Donovan Edwards was playing with like a soft cast on his hand and was banged up. And they torched that defense, right? And he made big throws. And I think this will be Jim Harbaugh's most talented team. They have a bunch of those guys who decided to come back as opposed to leaving early for the NFL. And a lot of those guys were their, real team leaders. And they're almost all back. I think, to me, they not only should be a playoff team, I think if JJ can take the next step, and look, he's going to need a little help from the receivers. It's a good.
Go ahead and say it, Bruce. Go ahead and guarantee it. They're winning the chip. Go ahead and say it. Go ahead and say it. We need it for the pod. Go ahead and say it. We can clip it off.
Harbaugh can win the national. This should be it. This is the most talented team, right? I don't want to say like they're the odds-on favorite, but they are the most talented team. This is the most talented team they've ever had. I don't think this is, are they more talented than you have to get through the SEC to win a national title, right? Their arch rival, who they whipped at their own place, were like this close to winning that game and knocking knocking the Bulldogs out of the mix, right? And I think this Michigan team will be is more talented than, you know, than the one they just had. I actually think it's considerably more talented. I like their chances, right? You know, one thing I heard a couple of years ago, one of the things that helped flip the switch at Michigan was they started to really embrace the, hey, we're going after Ohio State year round, basically. And they would put in this beat Ohio period, which was essentially 9-on-7 and getting after them. All of a sudden now I heard they have a beat Georgia period too. Well, the beat probably needs to happen in the, you know, in the recruiting office as much as anything else. But I think, look, I think Jim Harbaugh knows he watched and he saw what happened with Georgia. He and Ohio State. I think he knows, you know, they're a different kind of team than certainly Ohio State. Ohio State with CJ, and you have great receivers and they've recruited at a high level, but they have really good players too. I don't think people realize how talented JJ is, because I think you get caught up in, hey, they got the great offensive line and really good running backs, and it's not like an air raid offense. JJ is really gifted, and I think we need to see it from the next year, you know, this year. And then obviously on the other side, you know, I think Mike Norvell and his staff have done an amazing job. We talk about getting it out of the ditch. I mean, Florida State towards the end of Jimbo Fisher had just fallen apart, especially on the offensive line, and they built it. It's been a lot of three steps forward, one step back. I think Jordan Travis has really continued to get better and better. I love some of the transfers. I know, you know, DJ, you mentioned Jared Verse. I mean, Albany State, you know, the other Albany State, the Great Danes, not the one where, like, you know, where you occasionally get some NFL players. And, you know, it's a win that they were able to get him to stay, because I suspect he probably would have been a first round.
He would have been a top 10 pick last year, and he came back to school. Him and the Penn State tackle were the two that shocked me that they went back. Big gets.
Yeah, and I doubt that ever happens if there's not NIL the way it is now. And they have really good receivers, right? Like Johnny Wilson, who was at Oregon, is a real difference maker, you know, in terms of just dimension. So I think they can hang their hat on that. I think he's recruited well. Florida State has gotten, you know, buzzy again in terms of, like, I think for a while recruits were like, probably, hey, I'm going to go to the SEC now. I think they're listening more, and they have been for a little while, and certainly transfers have. I don't think, you know, for a while it felt like it was Clemson and then everybody else in the ACC. And there's some good teams, you know, like NC State has had talent. Obviously, UNC still has Drake May. But to me, Florida State, I think this is a team that has a chance, a legit chance to be a playoff team.
You know, so it's funny because you took me where I wanted to go, because you mentioned Clemson. Is the fear factor gone from the Tigers? I mean, are we done kind of viewing them as kind of like the bully at the top of the mountain? Do we think Dabo can get them back to being in the conversation with Georgia and the top people that are in the playoffs?
I think so. But, you know, look, he made a big, bold move by grabbing Garrett Riley to shake up what was a really, really stale system there. You know, they're one of the few programs that was not, you know, all in and getting transfers. Mm-hmm. And I think what you saw, and I remember I did a big story with my colleague Grace Rayner, who covers Clemson, and talked to RG3 and talked to some other coaches, as well as Dan Orlovsky, who both those guys had called Clemson games about how stale the Clemson offense had gotten. And, you know, look, DJ, DJ Uiagalelei, when I spoke to him a couple of months ago, really spoke in detail about some of the frustrations of playing in that system, where you don't feel like they're taking chances. You don't feel like they believe in you. The quarterback, I mean, you guys saw, I think I've seen Cade Klubnik in person. I think he's very good. I just don't know, you know, when Clemson was really rolling, they had a crazy run of receivers. It wasn't mm-hmm. quite like what Alabama had, but it was something now. And mm-hmm. it dried up. I don't know if they missed on a few guys they expected to be something else. Either those big receivers just weren't as dynamic as maybe the guys before them were. And so some of it started to get a little leaky. I certainly they had good D linemen, but I think that D line group was probably a notch below that great, you know, four man group they had maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And so I still think they're really good, but what ended up happening was, you know, he lost some guys who became head coaches who were core guys on both sides of the ball. And I think that hurt. And I think the Garrett Riley hire is a big one, but you know, Brent Venables was a terrific defensive coordinator for him. And we'll see how Wes Goodwin does. You know, that was a guy from inside that he believes in, and those are big shoes to fill.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Bruce and Bucky don't know about this, but I'm going to go ahead and make it an executive decision here and say we need to bring back the coach draft that we did a couple years ago. So they have no preparation. I'm just ambushing them right now. We're going to get to that right after this. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you. All right, guys, we've had a chance to mention some quarterbacks, some other topics around college football. One thing I wanted to get to you, Bruce, and then we're going to get to this coaching draft, which you guys knew nothing about. When you were talking about Harbaugh, I was just thinking about this, and I remember watching the tape last year on their guys and looking up players and being like, who's this guy? Is he coming back? And all these studs they have coming back to the school. You mentioned you thought it was the best chance that Harbaugh would have to win a championship. And then you talked the thing you said about the beat Georgia period. And I was sitting here thinking, like, when you look at Jim Harbaugh, his career has been defined about beating up the bully. Like, it started with Pete Carroll. And it was like, I remember, like, laughing when it was like, he's going to really? Stanford's going to compete with USC? Like, ha, ha, ha. And then he goes to Michigan and obviously takes their lumps there against Ohio State for a good period of time. But now he's got their number and he's beating up that bully. So I think people that are listening to this are going to hear, I know especially SEC fans are going to hear that beat Georgia period and they're going to roll their eyes and they're going to laugh. I'd be careful on that, man, because he's got a long track record of doing this.
And you can't, like, he's the guy. It's hard to figure out how he does it, right? Like, what is his superpower as a coach? And I remember both Tom Rinaldi and I were on the sideline of that game in Columbus. And at one point it was like early fourth quarter. And all of a sudden, like, you know, Donovan Edwards, you know, like blew open the game. And we were in a timeout. And I said, Tom, turn around. Just like we're on the Michigan bench behind it. And I look at and it was just shock and disbelief because all those Ohio State fans, I think, were convinced that they're going to come get such revenge here on Jim Harbaugh. They're coming into our place. This isn't going to happen. And it happened worse. And I think what was pretty remarkable, there are some guys, when I say the leadership, like, you know, I don't know where they have a nickelback, Mikey Sanders, still number zero, who was a receiver. He's a Boston kid who is super tough. And you feel his presence. Like, I was like watching him as he's leading the team and those guys. And I think the way, you know, just talking to people around the program, what they say Harbaugh's really good at is they go hard at practicing football. And it's just like all the toughness and all that, all those intangible qualities, I think he's able to foster and bring out. And I think that ends up becoming such an asset for them because the game, to a large extent, has gotten away from some of that. Maybe people don't tackle as much as they don't tackle as much as they used to at practice. And there's a lot of stuff where it's a perimeter oriented game. And I think Harbaugh hasn't moved much, if at all, from what he was. And certainly at Stanford, where they became the bully of the Pac-12, or the Pac-10. And, you know, he's done it again. It took him a while, but, you know, it's a fascinating thing to be around.
It is so interesting, like the Michigan stuff in terms of like physicality and toughness, because Bruce, you talked about the college landscape is very perimeter oriented. It's rare that we even see pro style offenses play when you look at the landscape. What can you see as the new trend offensively in football when it comes to like RPO, screen game, all this other stuff? Because I see stuff buzzing on Twitter, but I wonder, because you're in the know, what are some of the new things that you think we'll see?
I'm curious how the offshoot of what's gone on at Tennessee, if it's because it's not an air raid or anything like that. It's so wide, right? And there's times where the receivers may not even run a route.
Our brows, yeah, dead Cowboys, yeah.
It's a really interesting thing, but now that it's at Tennessee, and certainly wasn't like off the radar when it was at Baylor and then UCF, and to some degree Lane was doing it when he took some Bryles guys to Ole Miss. But now that it's on Tennessee and people are seeing it, I think it's going to be interesting to see, will that grow out? I do think you will see more of the Lincoln Riley, Bill Beedenbow run game with all the counter stuff that they do. And it's a problem for people. And I think as USC continues to ascend, I think people will, it's a copycat business, right? Because the air raid guys, and I have a story that's going to run this week on what it's like to be an air raid defensive coordinator, right? And but all the challenges that come with that, right? And so most of those guys who were air raid guys, whether it was Dana or Lincoln, and now we're seeing it with Lincoln's brother Garrett, I think
Ruffin McNeil did that for a long time, Bruce.
He did do it, right? He's one of the guys I talked to. But you've seen it, like NC State, and they're not an air raid team, but Tony Gibson had been an air raid defensive coordinator with Dana Holgorsen. But they evolved because they felt like they had to evolve to win. And I think that's the give and take part in terms of how coaches are looking at it and go, okay, what can we do here within the rules? Because for so long, I think it was, let's get numbers and put up stats. But I think otherwise you're looking at, well, who are the best defenses? Well, it's typically like these teams in the Big Ten because the offense that they're seeing, right? And so that's why I think you may see a lot of the elements that maybe Lincoln Riley's really good at that maybe Mike Leach didn't do. I think you'll see some of those things continue to seep out and for people to adopt it. And I think you'll also see, you'll see elements that I think Kansas picked up last year that they were really good with, Jalen Daniels, and that stuff that Coastal Carolina has been really good at, right?
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that they were doing, Jamie Chadwell did really well. And there's some smaller schools that do that. I think you're going to see that because now, Kansas became, went from being horrible to pretty respectable, and their offense was a problem for people. And I think they picked up some things. And I think there's going to be some coaches going, we don't need to have Caleb Williams back here to be a problem for people. And now, fortunately for Kansas, they got a super smart quarterback who makes really good decisions and is in that. But again, by the way, another Southern California kid, I think he's from like 15 minutes away from here. So good for Jalen Daniels, good for Kansas to find a system that suits him well.
All right. We're jumping into this now. I'm going to make this easy on you guys because I'm going to take Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and just say we probably are all in agreement that, with what they've accomplished and where they are, those are the top two guys. And people can look, they can say, well, where Kirby is now, maybe he gets the nod over Nick's lifetime, what he's accomplished. I'm going to go, just put those two guys away. We don't even have that conversation. That's old and tired. So if we take those two guys out of the mix, Bruce, we'll go Bruce, Bucky, me, we'll snake it. We'll do three rounds. If you had a program, here's the scenario. We have a program. We have a program that's capable of winning a national championship. We're a blue blood program, and we can make any hire, and literally everyone in the country is available to hire. That's the parameters that we're going with here. And we're taking Saban and Kirby Smart off the table. Bruce, you get to take the first pick. Who do you want?
Ooh. Can I trade with the person who has the third pick so I can get two in a row?
Oh, you want to do that? I'll do that. I'll go. So then I'll get to go first then. And so I'll go first. Then Buck, so we'll go the opposite way here. So if I get to go first and I'm at a blue blood program, I can hire anybody that I want. I actually think I'm going to take Lincoln Riley with my first pick.
Okay.
I'm going to be able to get quarterbacks, elite, elite, elite quarterbacks. I know he's going to develop quarterbacks. That's a given. I mean, you already start there. I already start with the most important position I know I'm going to be taken care of as long as he's my head coach, because they're all going to want to go play for him. And he's innovative. He's always looking ahead. Got to get the defensive thing worked out a little bit, but that would be my first pick, Buck. You look incredulous there. Who did you expect me to pick?
Wow, I'm surprised. Number one overall. I think sometimes your Cardinal pops out, like the closet Cardinal. I think
he's going to win one. Out. It's coming. I mean, it's sooner or later. It might be a couple years. He's going to win one there.
So here's what I say, because Bruce kind of led us to it. I will say the innovation that we've seen from Lincoln Riley in terms of the GT, GH, GY, whatever counter game you want to call it, it has been fantastic. And his ability to utilize that run game with any type of quarterback that he's had, because we've seen him do it with Baker Mayfield. We've seen him do it with Jalen Hurts. We saw him do it with Kyler Murray. That part of what he's able to add to the run game on top of all the stuff that he do with the air raid, man, he is a very, very difficult coach to defend. Until he gets the defense right, though, I got to pump my brakes. I love him, but I got to pump my brakes on that. So now, but look, you left me with the guy that I wanted from the jump. And so Bruce talked about Jim Harbaugh and what he's been able to do. Look, I'm an unabashed Jim Harbaugh fan, like in terms of the way that he has built his programs going all the way back to USD, Stanford, Michigan, what he did with the Niners. I'm all in. The cultural stuff that he's talked about, I believe in it. And then the old school physicality and toughness. And I know they try not to let a lot of that stuff leak out, but I have heard how they practice. Back in the day when he first got there, the Michigan Mile, making those guys run a mile every Monday, not because it had any necessarily cardiovascular benefit, but a level of toughness. When you talk about having a guy that knows how to beat the bully, there is something that he is able to give his team, a level of confidence that enables them to beat the bully. So, yeah, I'm all in on Jim Harbaugh.
Nice.
You know, I jumped out because I was didn't want to be in the position of, do I take Dabo or not? Now you almost forced, you know, like, I'm actually going to take two Big Ten guys. I'm going to take Ryan Day to some of the same reasons DJ said about Lincoln. He's really good offensively. I think he's different, obviously, but they are able to get a ton of skill guys there. I think he understands the program. I think he's a leader. I really like some of the intangible stuff. I know that they've had the Michigan problem the last 2 years. I don't ignore that. The other one I'm going to take, because of the way you frame this question, I'm going to take James Franklin. And I get on this whenever I talk about James Franklin as a top five coach, and I bring up what he did at Vanderbilt, which still blows my mind, because Vanderbilt was horrific before he got there and horrific after, and he got him in the top 25. He's recruited really well at Penn State, and I think this is a big year for them. You know, I like Drew Aller. They have stud running backs again. They have some special players on defense. You mentioned their left tackle, who's like 17 years old still, but like really, really gifted. He would be I know I'm leaving Dabo on the table, and Dabo has national titles, but those are the two guys I'm going to take here.
Ooh, I already know who Bucky's taking. I've already written it down, but I'll just wait, and then I'll just flip it over as soon as he picks him. Go ahead, Buck.
Okay, well, I was going to say, I do like the fact that you gave James Franklin his flowers, because the Penn State team that we're seeing now is different. The number of pros that they're putting out, because they're getting these super athletes, that is different than the old school Penn State squad. And so his recruiting efforts and the fact that they are in the mix, even though they haven't won a national title, he deserves credit. I am going to take Brian Kelly, friend of the program. I am taking him because, look, you said building it from the ground up. I mean, come on, that was a layup. And it's different because he had left Dabo Swinney on the table. But here's what I'll say about Brian Kelly. His long track record for going from program to program and bringing them not only back to relevance, but to bringing them to a high level, from Cincinnati to Notre Dame to now going to LSU, he gets it. He has a recipe. LSU has probably exceeded my expectations in terms of being back, because I didn't think that was going to be a great fit. His personality and what they had, but they needed some of that after the Eddie Yeo thing. So Brian Kelly to me, because I think he's a program builder and he understands how to do it. And he also does a pretty decent job of getting quarterbacks ready to play.
Hey, Bruce, you'll probably know this. I don't know if I can look it up fast enough. But like, what was Clemson's record last year? Because you'd think that they won three games the way that we're talking.
No, I feel like they've been 10-4. Like, they did lose to Tennessee in the bowl game, but like their down years were 10-4 years.
Last year they won 11-3 last year. It's not like they've fallen off a cliff. They just haven't been that elite, elite level. And Dabo's got trophies. So he's also been someone that's been able to attract quarterbacks. Now, obviously, it didn't work out with DJU. We talked about that earlier in the episode. But look at the run that he had when he had Deshaun Watson. Look at what he did, obviously, with Trevor Lawrence.
Taj Boyd put up big numbers
there. Yeah, no, exactly. Going back to Taj Boyd, throwing to Sammy Watkins and that group. He's always had receivers. The offensive line's never been an area of real strength for them, but it hasn't impacted their offense with what they've been able to accomplish, and defensive linemen. So if we talk about winning in the NFL with quarterbacks and defensive linemen and pass rush, we obviously feel similarly about college football. You win with quarterbacks and pass rush. So Dabo's been able to recruit and develop those two positions. So I mean, this is a steal for me, getting Dabo at this point in time. I get the snake. I get another pick here.
You do get another pick. No, you get another pick. You get to go back.
All right. Gosh, I can go in a couple different directions with this.
He's got a list. And that makes it unfair here because he knew what he was doing.
I told Bucky, I was excited the magazines came out because I got my Lindy's magazine. So I'm just looking, just so I'm not forgetting any names, I'm just looking through the top 25 saying of like, what coach am I not thinking of right now? Because I've got some young guys that I kind of like to throw in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. My man's struggling.
Oh, I already know where I'm going because I feel like Bucky's trying to monopolize toughness. He wants to, at the end of this draft, talk about how if he took all his coaches and put him in a cage match that they'd beat up mine and Bruce's coaches, how tough and physical they are. So I'm not going to allow that anymore.
What?
So you're taking one of two guys here.
And go ahead. Give me your guess.
My guess is, by the way, I snubbed Cam Rising. He slipped my head when I
was
quarterbacks, and he makes plays. But the tough guy, the king of the cage guy, is now
You're going with – no, Fickell. You're saying Fickell. No.
Fickell is the tough – I think if – and I did a story on this.
You take him over Whittingham?
Oof. In the cage, yeah, Fickell
wrestling champ in high school. Remember, we had him on. We talked about that.
I know, but I feel like Whittingham would bite. Like I feel like there's like elbows. So, like he's not playing within the rules. I think in that cage, and he's older, so he's got old man strength. So
and he has a good coach. There's no like his teams play so hard. They're always physical. He would have been one of my two guys on my next
team.
Yeah. So I'll take Whittingham. And the thought being, the way we frame this is that if you were at a top program, a blue blood program that could get recruits, you know, can win a national championship, we've not got to see. We've seen him get close at a school that, God bless Utah, they've overachieved like nobody's business. But like I sit there and think, what if you had taken him and put him at a Michigan, put him at a Georgia, USC. I mean, what does that look like? I think he's literally been one of the best coaches. You might know this because I've always been curious about this. He would never say anything publicly about it, but have NFL teams come after him at all over the years?
Not to my knowledge.
God, what? Why not?
I don't know. To me, one of the bigger missteps USC made was – when they got Sark, and that was, you know, not a great time for Sark, you know, like Kyle Whittingham grew up in LA. I know he's got deep roots where he's at now, but like, you know, he's done really well in Southern California recruiting. Like that is what USC has always wanted, you know, in terms of like, just in terms of the style of being the most physical team. So, you know, again, I don't know what it would have taken him to come, but I don't, you know, again, he's a fantastic coach and he proves it time and time again.
Buck, you're up here.
Okay.
Last pick.
I know it's my last pick. And so if it last pick, what we do in the draft, we throw darts. So I'm going to throw a dart here that's probably going to make both of you guys fall out of your chair. But I'm going to go sight unseen with a coach that's 27-6 in his coaching career. I'm going to go with Deion Sanders. If I have an opportunity to go a blue blood program, we have already seen how he's completely flipped the Colorado roster and the buzz that he's created. Now, we haven't seen what that looks like and what that plays out. But I'll tell you this, having watched a lot of HBCUs, a lot of black college football, what they did at Jackson State was nothing short of remarkable. The way they rebuilt that, the way they put that together, the infrastructure when it came to the recruiting. And I will tell you, having known a couple of dudes on that staff, like lost in all the glitz and glam of Deion is an old school coach with old school values when it comes to it. And so I'm a bank on Deion. I'm a gamble on him on the come that he can take a blue blood program and get them over the top, because we know that he's already created a recruiting machine at Colorado, and it's only going to get better if he wins any games there.
Interesting pick. That is I don't want to say it's a sleeper, because it's like the most charismatic guy who's ever coached in college football, but just in terms of, you know, the name I'm going to throw out, I thought actually Bucky might be going for the way he kind of started to build it up. And it's somebody who has won a ton of games and is now getting traction in the Big 12. And that's Chris Klieman at Kansas State.
Good coach. Ooh, nice.
Having done a lot of Big 12 games, when you talk to coaches in the league, invariably they'll be like, that's the best coach team in our league. They're really hard to play against. And, you know, he won a bunch of national titles at North Dakota State, and now he's got it rolling at K-State. He's that one. I mean, there's a bunch of guys I think who could have been in this spot, but to me, he's a top 10 coach, and, you know, we have more than 10 guys. So I feel confident with him.
I know, because of the players that they've lost, that maybe the shine's come off the star a little bit, but, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but is Matt Campbell, are they going to be able to get that thing kind of back going again? Has NIL impacted them? Like, I just know, I think the guy's a great coach. I think he's done a great job of finding, developing players. I know his reputation from an NFL standpoint has been pristine. Obviously, it wasn't what they wanted last year. But what's your expectation, Bruce, with that program, with him at the helm? Are they going to be able to get it back, or is he going to have to go somewhere else to eventually get where he wants to go?
I think he's going to get them back in the top 25. The Big 12 is the most unpredictable Power 5 conference. Nobody saw TCU coming. They were like preseason number 7. I think that year where they were coming off their best season ever in Ames, they were number 9 in the country. They had almost everybody back, and they had really good players, you know, back. Obviously, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if there should be revisionist history of what happens when your quarterback blows up as a rookie, but was there forever. And I think people just like, okay, what happened with him? You know, it's almost like you're there so long, people start to see all the flaws and all the warts, maybe some of that other stuff. You know, Breece Hall was a phenomenal running back. They had really good tight ends. Receivers were good. I think that, and then they stumbled. They went like 7-6 and lost a bunch of close games. I think he's a terrific coach. He's one of the few coaches, whenever I talk to him, I always feel like I learned something, and you just kind of get wowed by him when you're around him. I could see why NFL people, like, he's great on development. I mean, look what he did. You know, Will McDonald, I thought, was an awesome player. They did so much with him. And I think it was a hiccup for them, really, because they went from losing a bunch of guys who were all coming up, you know, that year when Brock was a senior, it was a little bit wobbly. And then I think it just, because it was a little hangover after that effect, I think they will bounce back, because I think he's too good of a coach. My colleague at The Athletic, Max Olson, did a really good story on how they shook up their staff this off season. And I think it was a good window into what's going on in Ames, because he's a really loyal guy. He's this, you know, old Mount Union guy who had a bunch of people around him. And I think some of those decisions are hard to make when maybe the fit's just not right. And so I think they will respond to it well, because he's got a great eye for talent. He's really good at developing players. And I would not at all be surprised if they, you know, win 9 games this year. And it's hard to do what he's doing in Ames.
You know, Bruce, it's funny, because I think I read this story that Max Olson put out. And one of the things that was stood out to me a couple years ago, he tried a different approach in spring ball when it came to like their strength and conditioning, some of the developmental stuff that they did. And it appeared that he kind of regretted some of that, because he talked about his players not looking like what he expected them to look like in the middle of the season. And so can you give like a little light on what they were doing and why he has shifted gears with those things?
Yeah, I think what's really fascinating is, you know, use this as context. So when he got there, they were a woeful program. And I remember one of the better players he had was a quarterback who was a state champion wrestler who was playing linebacker and playing both ways and was just a great intangibles guy. And then they got David Montgomery, who was on his radar at Toledo. And he told me a story about David Montgomery when he was a freshman, like working out like in the winter at like on Friday night at like midnight in their indoor. And he was doing it the first week by himself. And then he got two guys come. And then all of a sudden it just kind of like mushroom. And I think what the challenge with using that as a context is, and this is an old school, we talked about Harbaugh, you know, I know Les Miles definitely fits in this category of the old school football guy where more becomes less. And the development mm-hmm. of, you know, one of the things that helped LSU to turn the corner after Miles left was Ogeron listened to Jack Marucci, who's this, you know, brilliant trainer, who's one of the smartest guys in sports, you know, period. And recognizing you have all this GPS technology and what are the things you can do so players are not just burned out and everything. And I think it's a hard thing for them to figure out, right? Because we were talking about this a little bit and the teams don't tackle as much. Like, how do you keep that? And I think for Matt, you know, in terms of the talking to the strength and conditioning piece, it was like, okay, what is the best formula for where we are right now? And I think what may work out okay for, you know, great for David Montgomery may not work out great for, you know, 60% of the team. And I think finding that balance and some of it, you know, certainly tied into what it was like on the field for them. I think that was that's hard decisions to make when some things you probably believe in turn out not to be beneficial or turn out to be detrimental. And I think that was the part where I felt like he was really candid and in kind of walking people through how that works, because what may have been great, what certainly seems to be great for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan now, you know, people can talk about when it doesn't work. Oh, that's the reason why you have all this talent. You guys only went 8-5 that year or something. You know, it's kind of, not to use the pun, but it's a little fickle of a way how these things work. I mean, they lost a lot of one score games. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that can be, you know, it's easy to say it's luck or whatever it is, but I think there's a lot of things. And so when these coaches, and he, I think, was very self-reflective and, you know, made some hard decisions. And look, I think the guy at the end of the day is one of the smarter people in coaching. I know whenever I've talked to him, he will do this stuff where he's kind of downloading you in terms of like, hey, have you talked to this person? Like, what are they doing over there? Or what's, mm-hmm. you know, like, and he's a student of the game. I imagine that, you know, if you guys have talked to him, you'd be like, this is one of the most interesting guys in football. You know, he's one of those guys. And I just think he realized, all right, I got to let's make this change. I think it's for the better of the program at this stage.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. I remember asking him about what did people miss on quarterbacks, and he used the phrase competitive excellence. And he said basically just every single thing that they do, if you look at the great ones that you get a chance to see or emulate or hear about, that it was, it didn't matter what they were doing, it was just this competitiveness that you can't help but see. And I thought that was a fascinating phrase or whatever with competitive excellence, talking about quarterbacks. There's one other storyline I want to hit you on that I feel like, and maybe I just haven't seen it. Maybe it's been written. I don't know what your thoughts on it are, but to me, the most fascinating coaching situation to watch in college football this year is actually at Texas A&M with Bobby Petrino. I feel like nobody even knows this. Like maybe the hardcore SEC Texas A&M fans do, but Jimbo Fisher kind of falling on the sword and saying, okay, whatever we're doing offensively is not working. And we're going to go ahead, and there's obviously risk involved here, but for whatever personality issues Bobby Petrino has, obviously we know about some character flaws in the past. You talk to defensive coaches about defending a Bobby Petrino offense, and they'll still tell you it's one of the most difficult things to deal with. Do you think this has a chance to work there?
I think it has a chance to work. I mean, the question is the two of them together, right? Jimbo begrudgingly was giving up. That's his baby. And from talking to a lot of people who've coached there with him, it's complicated. He's tough on, you know, it's probably trying to do too much. But they have talent. You know, Buck, I'm sure you remember Wegman. Mm-hmm. It's really gifted. And everything I've heard from people who've been, you know, been around him and worked with him is he's got the intangibles to handle Jimbo and all that stuff. You know, his former really gifted baseball player too. They have some really good receivers, you know, really special, talented, you know, they have a lot of speed at the skill positions. I think it can work. It's, but also it's like, how do those two mesh? At some point, you know, you're not kidding in terms of like character issues with, so Petrino did well at a lower division school and then got the job in UNLV to be the offense coordinator for Barry Odom. And then when Jimbo called him, I don't know if it was a month later, you know, he jumped at it. It's Texas A&M. And it is definitely an interesting dynamic to see how it works out because Jimbo, you know, he has a buyout that's near $90 million, right? He has been a huge disappointment. He's had one good year there. He's been there a long time. He signed the highest ranked recruiting class in the history of like the internet rankings a year and a half ago. And that a lot of those kids are already gone. And so it's fascinating to see how it's going to work. Their schedule sets up really well. Week two, they have their only road game for like the first 6 weeks of the season. It's at Miami. Miami's also rebuilding. They're not that good. If they win the game against Miami at Miami, I think they have a real chance to get, you know, get out of the gate 5-0 because everything else there is really winnable. And I think then they can get some momentum. Now, if they stumble against that Miami team, I think the buzzards are going to start to circle and you see how do they deal with adversity. But, you know, and, you know, while we're talking about A&M, I do want to, you know, one of the core guys there for a long time, Terry Price, he was their defensive line coach, was a terrific player there and one of the best people you'd ever meet. Like, you know, just tragically he passed away on Friday. And he was one of the few people who was like a link to the RC through Sumlin. And they kept him, you know, he kept on as the defensive ends coach and just, you know, the salt of the earth, just an awesome dude. And in a, you know, in a way, it was like, you know, you feel like you have these other guys with, you know, Jimbo, who's certainly polarizing, and Bobby Petrino, who's probably one of the least,
least liked.
I mean, you know, like the coaches you'd hear the worst things about from coaches were basically Bobby Petrino and Todd Graham. And, you know, they added him with Jimbo, not Todd Graham, obviously. But, and I just think, you know, that program has to be reeling because TP was such a beloved figure, you know, and you know, thoughts to his family and to everybody who loved him because he was awesome. But, you know, back to, you know, A&M on the field, they have the pieces to work with. I think it's going to be interesting because, again, the SEC West to me is, you know, that division or what has been, you know, Alabama's still Alabama. But you got the Mississippi schools are still sorting it out. Arkansas is better than what they were. But, you know, you got Auburn's rebuilding. We got LSU, which I think is going strong. But like, you know, if Jimbo goes 8-4, it's better than what they were last year. But when is he going to get it done? Right. I mean, to me, this, I don't want to say this is a desperate move, but it definitely feels like, all right, you know, I got to put all the chips on the table on this guy and hopefully it's going to work out and hopefully it's not going to implode because it's either going to go great or it's going to go horrifically bad.
In some ways, quick follow-up, Buck. In some ways, do you think Jimbo needs, if he can get the double-digit wins, I think the best thing that's going to happen to him is that Texas is going into the SEC because at least you give your fans that. Like, even if you stumble and they've beaten Alabama, you know, once, but if, you know, if you stumble inside and you lose to some of the SEC powers, but you just beat the stuffing out of Texas, it's almost in some ways you can still say, it's, you know, okay, well, at least they don't even have that opportunity at this point in time. Like, we got to do some damage in the SEC or this is a total failure with the resources they put into that. I almost think Texas going into that conference is almost a good thing for A&M.
He better get to that 8-win mark because that's the one place that may be able to find $90 million in the seat cushions. Jeez.
Yeah.
No, oh, man. That is, I got to ask you this real quick because I'm so fascinated by Hugh Freeze and Auburn. Why would this work out for the War Eagle?
Because Hugh Freeze is really good college play caller. He's really good with offense. I mean, you saw what he did with Malik Willis at Liberty. Malik Willis was kind of given up on, you know, at Auburn and he transferred there and was terrific in that offense. Hugh Freeze did, you know, he beat Saban multiple times when he was at Ole Miss, having been around, and he has significant baggage. You know, his some of the character stuff is creepy. And it's you know, as I don't want to say it's not an easy hire for Auburn to make, but it's like, he there, everybody knows Hugh Freeze's issues and his baggage on the field, and not just on the field, but in terms of like having been around him, because I did that recruiting book Meat Market where I was there around Ole Miss for 2 years and he was on staff, and you'd watch Hugh Freeze get in front of the team when he was doing his portion of special teams. And he is a dynamic speaker and he can really connect with players and he can get them believing. And I think he's a, I do think he's a really good college football coach. And I think he has a really good feel for what it takes. Like if you told me that Hugh Freeze was going to be the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M, and this was never, you know, thing as opposed to Biden, I'm like, I think he will get them rolling. He just, I feel like has a good sense of what works and how to make it simple and how to make it translate. And I think he's a really good fit there. I suspect he will get Auburn back in the top 20 within before the end of 2024, if not sooner. Plus now they have the transfer portal. Like Peyton Thorne was at Michigan State, did some good things, then struggled a little bit. I mean, he'll be a lot better because of who is going to, who, you know, where he's playing and who he's playing for. I think he's really good. Also, by the way, Ron Roberts, the defense coordinator he got from Baylor. I mean, that's the guy's the guru to a lot of, you know, Dave Aranda's old guy, a bunch of people. Really, really good defensive coordinator. That was a great get, I think, for Hugh Freeze to get him in there to run the defense.
All right, Bruce, you've been generous with your time here. I'm going to get you with one more and we'll get you out of here. But we've talked a lot about top quarterbacks, draft eligible quarterbacks. We've talked about coaches. We've talked about programs. Haven't hit you on this, but I want on the way out the door, just some freshmen. I know you get a chance to get out and visit with guys, making calls. Are there, you know, throw out as many as you want, maybe 3, 4, 5 guys, but just freshmen you think that can step in and make big time impact right now?
Well, we talked about Lincoln before. He's got a tight end who will be a huge problem for defenses, Deuce Robinson. And I feel like, I don't know. Is it, you know, his dad might have been around your age, DJ? Maybe he's, you know, he's probably a little younger, but was a great, Dominic was a great two-sport athlete at Florida State. And then I think he played for the Brewers. And his son is also a great baseball player, but he's 6'6", 230. I think, you know, we talked about the freaks list for a minute. He's like 21-plus mile per hour on the GPS. Just a marvelous all-around athlete. And again, in that system, I think they will be able to showcase him and do some really cool things with him. I mean, he's a true freshman. He's there now. But I think he has a chance to be really, really special. You know, again, like you got Caleb, you got speed receivers and everything else. I think
how's just that freshman receiver, the other kid that they
Vegas?
Have? Yeah.
They love him. They love him. I mean, you know, again, you lose Jordan Addison, you lose Travis Dye, who's obviously a really good running back. They still have Mario Williams, who transferred from OU with them as a different kind of receiver. I mean, they're not hurting for receivers. I know when you were talking about drafting Lincoln as where you did, you talked about the quarterback piece. If you're a receiver, I mean, that's the place you're going to want to go because look who's throwing to you and look how they just scheme you open, right? So I would definitely put him high on the list in terms of true freshmen. I think there's a couple other guys to watch, you know, certainly Dante Moore at UCLA. I mean, he's really accurate with a super quick release. I don't know if he's going to be the guy who starts the season, but I think, and he's young too. He's like probably a year younger than most, you know, true freshman quarterbacks at this stage, but I think he will be one, a name to remember. I think he's as talented as any young quarterback that's coming into college football this year. You know, we talked a bit about Miami. They have bookend tackles who Mario Cristobal knows offensive linemen. He was one. Obviously, he had Penei Sewell, who turned out to be a great player for Oregon. The two guys he's brought in on both sides, I think, have a chance. I mean, they're going to be much better on the offensive line because they took a transfer center from UCF, Matt Lee, who I suspect will be is on the NFL's radar, was the best offensive lineman certainly at UCF and maybe in that league. And now he's the center. And I think those two offensive tackles have a chance to be really, you know, really, really good.
I love it. Buck, anything else you want to get? I took Bruce so long today, man, but it was too much fun. I couldn't help myself.
No, I'm going to save my last questions for the next time he comes on. We help him on here for a long time. We got a beefy episode, but I love it, man. So much information and knowledge.
You guys, I'm going to have to pick your brain on these two cornerbacks from FAMU that I need to have on the freaks list. So I'll leave you on that.
Ooh. Ooh. Hey, by the way, so everybody that's listening, and we talk about Freaks List all the time, when can we expect it, Bruce?
It's early August. I used to try to get it into July, and then interestingly enough, the Seahawks' great young cornerback made me realize when he was at UTSA, you know, I need to have this. Probably it's best served for me to have it in early August. And the reason why is because when you get a 6'4 cornerback who runs like 4.29 or whatever, and, you know, does all these crazy things, and the coach like, I'm afraid you put him out there, somebody's going to punch him. When's this running? I said, well, we're going to run it. And like, so basically by the time it's running,
the portal's closed.
He's in camp. No one's getting anybody eligible if you jump. Cause to me, that's been the best part of how the Freaks List has grown, is getting guys who are a little off the radar. And coaches are like always like, hey, can you not mention this guy? I mean, that's one of the challenges where you want to sound smart and you go to see somebody like, hey, who is that guy? And you're like, yeah, that's somebody I don't want you to talk about right now.
So, I already know the answer to this question because I can already imagine. And I know what you'll say to it, but I got to ask it nonetheless. You have to get calls from coaches of like, hey, I'm at this Big Ten school. I just lost a corner. He just left. Do you know any corners that you might know about?
Because all the PFF, like the database stuff now, these kids kind of blow up. And so everybody kind of knows about them. I'll tell you this. There was a offensive lineman who I had never heard of. And one of the schools I was talking to, he was not in the portal. And they were like, if he goes in, he would be the number one guy on our board. I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and this was like a school that's nowhere near where this kid lives or is from or any of it. And so I just think these recruiting staffs, I don't want to say they're bloated, but they have so many people in them that they are doing all the legwork on this to do it. And that's taken over the recruiting landscape of how they manage who's getting in here and who's not. But I will text you guys the name of one of these guys who's like, okay, this guy would like to sound smart on, but his coach doesn't want his name out there.
I get it. I've said last question 50 times, but I got to get this last one in. But I can't help myself. Ivan Bruce is just—it's too good. So I was talking to a coach the other day who's at a mid-major, and this was, I guess it was over the winter, and he had called one of his players in because they had a coach that had joined their staff from an SEC school. So he calls a player and says, hey, man, are you anything I need to know? Like, are you entering into the transfer portal? You want to leave? And he's like, no, coach, I don't know. Why would you say that? He said, well, we just hired a coach from this SEC school, and on the recruiting board, you're listed as committed. And sure enough, a couple days later, the kid, I guess he had to finish up his classes. He enters the portal. Bam, he's off to that SEC school. Before the kid had even entered the portal, he already committed to an SEC school. But I mean, like, you must hear some of the, I mean, you can't share them all, but you must hear some crazy stories with all this stuff going on right now.
Yeah, we did, Max Olson and I did this story on the Tampa portal and all the things that are going on. And so the story was up maybe for a week, and I got a call from a coach I've met before, but it's not somebody I know that well. And he left me like a 2-minute voicemail. He goes, hey, I got a story for you. Like, just to share my, you know, that every coach seems to have one.
Yeah.
And he said, our last game of the season we played, and he goes, I had a guy who was not the best guy in my room, but he's a good player. He started like a handful of games at the end of the year. And he comes in, they were having almost not exit interviews, but like he said, I had each guy come in before they broke for a break. And he said, he could tell the kid wanted to tell him something. He goes, anything else I need to know? He goes, yeah, I've gotten called by such and such. They said they can get me $200,000. And so he goes, really? He goes, you think it's legit? He goes, yeah, it's a legit guy. As well, you probably need to take it because we can't.
Yeah.
And he's like, the guy, you know, that was it, you know, and it's just like, and this was within conference. And I think that's not that uncommon. It's just, that's how it is. And look, as I had, you know, in that story, I mentioned there was a specific coach who said, a position coach, and he was like, I'm not going to fault the player, because he goes, I had a good job and then I got offered another good job that was going to pay me more. And I took it because it was better for me and my family. So how am I going to say anything to them when they're, you know, 19, 20 years old, and they're getting offered that?
Yeah. That's crazy. All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Bruce is the best. Again, you can find him in the fall on Fox, the best in the business. You can also read his stuff on The Athletic. Be on the lookout for the Freaks List. That'll be dropping in August. So, Bruce, we appreciate you. You are the best, man. Thanks for all the time today.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Buck, he's the best, man. Anytime we get Bruce on, I always feel like, you know, we get a chance to learn something. I thought it'd be a great opportunity just kind of over the summer, a little bit of a preview, a little college football preview as we head towards the season.
He is absolutely one of the best. He has his ear to the street. He knows everything when it comes from high school to the end of college and even to the pros. He knows so many people. He has so much access, and it's always great to have because I think he adds some insight and perspective that we certainly can't get with any other people.
And I know we have folks that listen to us that love the NFL or passionate about the NFL. The good thing is you're going to hear some of these names we talked about today as we go towards the draft next year. You'll start learning about those guys a little early here on the pod. We'll definitely circle back. We'll get back into the NFL on the next episode. But this was a fun detour here as we look at some of the top college football players and teams heading into next season. All right, that's going to do it for us. Appreciate you hanging with us. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.